This is the Happy Dev Podcast with me, James Brooks.
Hello, Happy Devers. Welcome to Season 2 of Happy Dev. It's James here. Just a quick intro on this episode, really. John Wiles and I recorded this at the very start of 2024. However, I then had laser eye surgery, and after that, I went on to give some talks at conferences, and so we never really got round to editing this quite as quickly as we had hoped. But it's here now, and I really hope that you enjoy the new series. See ya. Welcome, John.
Hey, James. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Pretty well, yeah. I feel like this year's getting off to a pretty busy start, but I'm doing good.
Good stuff. Yeah, it's been a hectic year and a hectic start to the year.
Yeah, it does seem to be. Yeah, I was reading a lot of people on Twitter saying how 2023 had been this awful year, so kind of hoping everyone has a slightly better one this year.
Yeah, I kind of think that 2023 was a really good year for me, to be honest. I started public speaking in earnest, and the only bad thing really was that I couldn't run the half marathon that I trained for. So hopefully 2024 is I get my redemption.
Yeah.
So I kind of briefly introduced you at the start there. You're now a co-host of Happy Dev with me. Would you like to just introduce yourself a bit?
Yeah, sure. For anyone who's listening, no, you probably don't know who I am. I'm not Laravel famous, that's for sure. I've been doing programming for about 16 years now, or there or thereabouts. I think you'd stop counting after about 15 years.
All blurs into one.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been basically a freelance contractor for that entire time, really. And I've been very fortunate. I've worked with some really great companies in that time, some really nice people. Most recently, I've been working with some of the folks at Titan, which is quite exciting. But I've kind of reached a point, I think, where I'm considering a career change. Not so much because I've fallen out of love with programming, but because I kind of feel like I want a job which is much more focused around interacting with people. So I'm going to be hopefully retraining or starting to train as a therapist, a psychotherapist, at some point in this year, if all goes well. But as part of that process, I suppose, I'm kind of looking for new ways to talk to people, to listen to people, to sort of understand how people tick, how they think, how they cope, which is why I got in touch with you, really.
It's very much a journey of self-discovery for you then, in a way.
Yeah, it sort of feels that way. It sort of feels like a lot of things have kind of come together at once. I've been doing some voluntary work, which involves a lot of talking and listening to people. So something like this feels like an unusual for me, but kind of a natural next step as well, sort of get more involved in that scene in the profession that I'm already working in. So
it's kind of exciting. Not often you get to marry two hobbies or careers together in such a tight-knit way, I guess.
I have thought about that a bit over the last few months, and I think broadly speaking I'm pretty excited, like, to have one foot in both worlds for the next sort of 4 or 5 years while I'm training, or hopefully training. It feels like an unusual and sort of quite interesting opportunity to get a sort of a different view on both worlds, almost.
Definitely. And also, kind of selfishly from my side, having somebody like yourself that's training to be a professional, like, psychotherapist, and so that's the right word, isn't it? Psychotherapist.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to sort of make myself out to be something I'm not yet, but it's certainly an interest and something that I'm getting more and more into.
Yeah, it's so exciting.
Yeah. So I know that after the first series, people were asking if you were going to get a chance to tell your story and give a bit of your background. Obviously, it's a little bit hard to interview yourself, at least not without worrying everyone.
Monologuing for an hour.
So we thought that in this first episode, it would be a good opportunity for people to meet James Brooks and for you to tell people a bit about how you think about your own mental health and work and family and all the rest of it. So perhaps to kick things off, for those who are less familiar with your background, maybe you could just start by giving us a bit of an idea about where you are in life currently and maybe a bit about how you got to where you are.
So I'm a software engineer at Laravel now, which is a PHP framework and developer tools company.
Prior to that, I was the software development manager at a travel company for nearly 10 years. I left a couple of times, went back, I managed a small team where we worked as like an online travel agency. So that had its own sort of difficulties in managing people. And then, yeah, but I never went to university. I came straight out of college into a support IT support role, and also did a bit of programming on the side. But yeah, that's it really. I've only ever really worked at two places.
Just because I know it's a bit of an interesting story, how did you get your job at Laravel?
Yeah, so Taylor Otwell, who runs Laravel, he was recording his own podcast at some point and mentioned that he was maybe considering the idea of having somebody come full-time to work on Forge, which is one of the Laravel services. And having had his number on my phone for some reason or another, I kind of messaged him. I was like, hey, I'm super interested, I'll take the job. And he was like, okay, cool, come work for Laravel. One of my favorite sayings in life is that if you don't ask, you don't get.
Mm-hmm. Well, fortune favors the bold in this case. Yeah.
Yeah, and so
ask for a job, get a job.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's worked really well ever since. I've been here for 4 years now, coming up to 5 years this year. And I love it. I've been able to travel the world, meet new people, learn a lot of things that were like previously outside of my domain. And yeah, it's just very fortunate, very lucky to be in the position I'm in now.
Excellent. So quite often you kicked off the podcast with a question basically about people's own experience with mental health. So I just wondered, like, when you first became aware of your own mental health and what that journey's looked like for you.
So I was bullied in high school. So for the international audiences, our high school runs from when you're 11 till 15, 16, depending on when you're born. And I got like severely bullied physically, mentally, emotionally for years. And I think I became aware of my own mental health probably at like maybe age 13, halfway through, that it was like really getting me down. I was like secluded, working on like code. Like, I had friends, some that lived local to me. We lived in a small village that was kind of isolated from the bigger town, and we had no real way of getting there apart from cycling, and it was like on the very top of a hill. So yeah, we had some friends, and I took up like jiu-jitsu, made some friends there as well. Jiu-jitsu served two purposes: one, making friends, and two, learning how to fall down stairs and get punched without getting hurt too much. So I kind of learned about that, and had I got very angry that the school wasn't doing anything about it, and I had a counseling session, and the lady there told me that I have anger issues. And I was like, well, yes, I am very angry, but not without good reason. Like, the school isn't doing anything about this, and what more can I do? I can't not be in school. So I was very angry, which isn't me as a person, but at the situation. And then I left school, which was amazing. I went to college and made loads and loads and loads of friends. And I felt like loved and appreciated for the person that I am, which was nice. Everyone has that kind of bit of anxiety, especially leaving. I left college like 6 months early to pursue a career. And that was a bit nerve-wracking, kind of going into a full-time working position at like 19 whilst kind of still doing my college course as well, to not throw everything away. And then I was in a relationship for like 6 years, and that was stressful. In hindsight wasn't the right thing for me. It took me a long time to realize that. And then my brother passed away. He committed suicide in 2018. And this is where things got like really difficult, because I lost my brother, and then a month later my first daughter was born. So I kind of went back to, eventually my wife convinced me that I needed to go back to therapy to kind of talk about how I should deal with this like absolute whirlwind of emotion. Like, on one hand, I'm grieving the loss of my baby brother, and on the other hand, I'm like there are no happiness words to describe having your first child or having any child, but especially at first when that whole like change, everything changes. Like how do you be happy and sad at the same time? And the answer is you don't, is what I found. You just take it as it comes, right?
Yeah. I mean, either one of those. I mean, I can certainly remember what it felt like when my first child was born, and it is quite an overwhelming experience. Either one of those two events in your life would have been hugely sort of emotionally challenging, but both at the same time, I can imagine that would have been incredibly difficult. I'm curious to know what your relationship was like with work at that point. I mean, you were programming around that time, I presume. So did you find work something that became almost an irrelevance? Was it something that you could sort of retreat into a little bit if you needed to? Sort of what was that relationship like for you?
So programming has always been the thing that I find happiness in. And when my brother died, I was off work for bereavement leave, which I had a couple of weeks, but I couldn't afford to spend more time off because I wasn't being paid, which is like a standard UK thing in many, many companies. And I also had to then take time off. I say I've got this obligation that I had to live up to, but obviously with my daughter being born, I was taking paternity time off then as well, which kind of has a sliding scale of amount that you get paid. And my wife was on maternity leave, so I had to be at work. But I kind of think between bereavement and my daughter, I was in such a haze of emotion, like coming up to her being born. I went back to work. I had to manage people that I like. People management is hard. The company itself was hard, and finding a headspace to be able to do one of those was incredibly hard. So often programming was something I'd go back to, but during this time, I think I just kind of somehow managed to get my way through each day to day. And if I'm honest, I don't really remember a great deal between that time. My wife said that I was like in the room physically, but absolutely not in the room at any point for a few months. Like just, we'd be having a conversation and I would just
be zoned out.
Yeah. Or not listen.
Yeah. I guess more generally, I'm outside of that very intense period. Is programming something that relaxes you, helps you switch off?
Yeah, it's changed. I think as I get older, that changes. I enjoy it so much, and I'm incredibly lucky that my hobby turned into my job, and I enjoy my job and therefore my hobby. But having now two kids and all these things going on, Laravel's very good. It's very easygoing. But it also consumes a lot of brain power in the day. I do program on an evening, like once or twice a week, but I also quite like just getting the kids into bed, having food and watching TV and just relaxing, yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. I think I had a very similar approach. Like before kids, I was probably bordering on a bit of a workaholic. You know, I'd wake up at sort of seven, sit down at my desk, start doing some work, you know, work through large part of the day, and then in the evening after I'd eaten, I'd maybe do a bit more. And I think when my son was born, that almost went out of the window overnight, because you just don't have the time anymore. And now that the kids are older, often when it gets to that point in the evening, you know, when they've gone to bed, you know, you've got like 2 hours to yourself. Often the last thing I want to do at that point, despite enjoying programming, is open a laptop and do what I was doing for the, you know, 8 hours or so during the day. So, I think family life is sort of quite a big break on those tendencies.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as the kids get older, that gets easier because there's less stress. Like at the moment, the kids are 5 and 2, and like every meal time is a stress. Every bedtime is a stress. So day to day is kind of maybe a bit more time for myself, but who knows? I'm probably massively wrong. Well, you know, and I'm probably massively wrong.
No, it does. In fairness, the amount of time spent just doing those things you have to do every day, you know, the cleaning up, I suppose, yeah, as much as anything, gets slightly less. But that leads me on to another question, actually, which was obviously, you know, a dad with young family, kids take a lot of time and energy. So how is your experience these days between juggling work, family life, and your own health, which I'm kind of including in that mental health and things like socializing and hobbies, which are so important for kind of maintaining a good mental health?
Yeah.
At the same time, like, what's your experience between sort of that balancing act?
So since starting work at Laravel, it's definitely a lot better than it used to be. My previous role was very demanding and I didn't have a whole heap of free time. At Laravel, I work from home, so I get to see my wife and my youngest like pretty much every day, all day in some way. My oldest is now, has just started primary school. So family time is nice. I get to spend a lot of time with them, and I'm sure I would be told otherwise for this, but I feel like I'm out once work's finished, unless something comes up, I'm now a lot better at kind of putting that to the side for the rest of the day. Maybe not so much on holidays. I like to check in. I really love my job. I really love the team and care that they're okay, and I haven't left any clangers anywhere. So I do like to kind of check in and make sure, like, even on holiday, like, how's everything going? But I do that also for my own mental health. I'm not worrying and anxious that I've broken something or that something has gone wrong and I can help, but I'm not there. Even though they tell me to leave it, I'm sure. And then health-wise, I was running a lot last year. I was training for a half marathon. Then I got shin splints. So that put an end to that for a bit. So I did have some physio for that, and the therapist was like, I can't tell you not to run, but I definitely wouldn't run if I was you. And I'm glad she said that, to be honest, because I would have, because I trained so long for it. I'm very lucky, actually. My wife is very supportive of everything that I do. So when I wanted to run a half marathon, I was spending a couple of hours out running. Well, at least a few hours a week, and that got progressively more and more as we were closer. I am a man of many hobbies. I like working with leather, which I find very soothing, just sat there sewing like wallets together. If I ever get raided, by the way, it's going to look ridiculous because I have a stack of wallets. I find that very mentally soothing.
How did you get into that? I don't think I've ever come across someone who says, yep, do a lot of leather work. That's a really interesting hobby, eh? Look at that. It's professional.
It's a proper wallet. So I've touched on this previously, but I've never thought of myself as a creative person until a few years ago. And part of that was I've seen people make wallets and like watch straps, that kind of thing. And I've always thought, oh man, that's really cool. I wish I had the skill to do something like that. And all I had to do was just try it. And the first few were terrible, but I just thought like, oh, I can't sew. I can't design things, which is just stupid to think. But it is an expensive hobby to get into. Leather isn't cheap. The tools get expensive. So I kind of like thought, nah, I've already got enough hobbies. I'll just put it off. And then for my 30th, my wife's family all bought me this leather making kit, and I've been obsessed since.
Wow. That's really cool. Yeah, it's always fun hearing about those little creative endeavors that people do that, you know, quite often you can go years without knowing that. Unless you go to someone's house and you see stacks of leather wallets.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can go kind of quite a long time without actually knowing that sort of thing about someone. So that's really interesting. Are there any other major hobbies in your life that you use to unwind?
I like taking photos. I'm not very good at taking photos, but I do enjoy that. One of my best friends is a wedding photographer, and I'll often send him a picture and he'll critique it, which is what, like, why I'm sending it to me. He's not a bad person. But I'm learning. There's a lot to learn with photography. But I do just like taking pictures, I think. That kind of came from when my brother died as well. I was looking for pictures, and I realized that we didn't really take that many when we were doing things. So we've got all of these memories, but memories fade.
and then you're like, oh yeah, I did that thing, but I've got nothing to remember it by other than that very fleeting moment. So I do try and take more pictures now, especially with having kids.
Yes, I frequently take photos on my phones that I don't look at ever again.
Yeah.
You know, but the thought of losing them, I did lose a phone last year or the year before last, and I hadn't updated my iCloud subscription or something. So I lost about 6 months worth of photos. In fact, I couldn't have told you what those photos were, but no. I knew that there was a 6 month gap where anything that I would have taken of the kids wasn't there. Like you say, the memories fade.
Yeah.
And you know, there's probably a balance to be found between kind of actually enjoying the experience rather than having a smartphone in front of your face.
So I bought a like actual digital camera to try and just make it more purposeful, and also if I get my phone out and I see notifications, I'm more likely to get distracted. So I got a camera, and then I got kind of obsessed with doing that as well. So I was taking pictures more than enjoying it, and so now my wife reminds me to like, hang on, like, let's take a step back, enjoy the moment, also
enjoy it first.
Yeah, enjoy it. And capture it. And I'm like, yeah, but she's 100% right. But while I'm learning photography, I'm like messing with all these settings, and I'm like, I just made it harder for myself almost, because phones are so good at just lift it up, take a picture, done.
Yeah, I think that's why I've never really made that transition to having a proper camera, just the extra effort it takes to kind of get out, get it set up. This is a complete tangent, but do you remember the advert for the Apple, I forget what it's called now, what's the sort of face mask, you know, the ski mask?
The Vision Pro.
And they had like a guy wearing it in this lovely family scene, and he was basically kind of capturing it on one of those things. I thought, that's so dystopian, like the idea that your kids can't even see your real eyes. Like, can you just it's bonkers. But
I feel like that anything is better than that, but it's like something out of a horror movie.
it really kind of made my skin crawl for some reason that I couldn't quite put my finger on, but it just looked so odd, you know. But anyway, so one thing I wanted to touch on was you mentioned a while back you work from home. Do you work from home fully remote, fully working from home?
So, yeah, fully remote. I do currently co-own an office with some friends of mine. They run a Magento agency, so it's kind of nice to be surrounded by people that are like-minded individuals. And often, like, as part of my job with Forge, we support servers that run Magento websites. So it's kind of nice I can run over and be like, does anyone know what this is? And likewise, they do some Laravel projects, and I kind of help them out with that occasionally, give them some pointers. So that's been nice. But yeah, 2024, I'll be just kind of working from home more. I feel like COVID has kind of ruined working from home. Like pre-COVID, I was working from home, and I'd go out and kind of explore different coffee shops or restaurants and just set up camp there for a few hours. And then COVID happened, and no one went anywhere. In fact, everybody came home. And then not everyone's gone back to work, and so there's lots of co-working spaces, which I'm not super interested in. But I also don't venture out to coffee shops and restaurants like I used to. Whether it was a habit, and I've lost that because of COVID, I don't know.
Yeah. Do you feel isolated at all? Do you, I mean, particularly with the people you are actually working with and building things with, you don't see them on a day-to-day basis. You're probably interacting mostly through something like Slack or, you know, the occasional video chat. Do you find that an isolating experience? Do you find that actually that's not too much of a problem?
It's not too much of a problem because we use some software called Tuple, which is a screen pair and remote application. And last year, Joe Dixon, he joined Laravel, and he's in Norwich. So we're in the same time zone. We work on kind of similar projects as well. So we end up kind of chatting on Tuple and helping each other out quite a bit. But also, like, I can go to any of the other employees and just start a call with them if I needed to. Anyone would be happy to jump on. And I think the whole, like, screen sharing, real-time communication makes it a lot easier. So I don't feel as disconnected anymore, I think, since we started using that. But there certainly are days where I wake up and I'm like, yeah, I've got my own company again. Maybe I'll go into the office.
Yeah. So when you mentioned you're going to be working from home more often in 2024, what's that structure going to look like? Are you going to be going in a couple of times a week?
Yeah, so the circumstances of the office are changing, so we won't have the building to use ourselves anymore. So I will just be working from home full time. I do have a friend's office that I go into twice a month anyway, to help out with something that they do. So not too worried, but I probably will get back into the habit of finding more coffee shops and just getting out of the house a bit.
Yeah, I think modern sort of video communication makes life a lot easier in terms of having some form of connection with your teammates. But there's, from my experience at least, sort of very little substitute for being in a room with someone and, you know, being face to face and seeing some of that extra body language that you miss in video.
I also think that because I get to travel quite a lot, speaking at conferences and just attending conferences, I get quite a fair share of human interaction in that case. It is very different to being in the office with people, for sure, but I think I'm the kind of person that's mostly happy with my own presence, I guess. And I get to see friends quite often as well. I'm hanging out with them a lot.
That was actually going to be my next question. In terms of sort of maintaining a social network outside of work, what does that look like for you, and how have you managed to maintain those kinds of connections, particularly post kids, you know, because I think that can be quite tricky.
Yeah, so there's a close group of friends that I have. There's four of us and their wives as well. So we see them quite frequently. They don't have kids, so they're a lot more flexible in when they can see us. And they often come to us as well, which we really appreciate. All non-parents out there, if you can help your parent friends by going to them, oh man, the amount of time and stress you save, I'm very grateful. So we do quite a bit with our kids, but we also do days out that, like, we'll just go for a walk as a group. Or like recently we did a day out in Manchester, just the adults. We did an escape room, some food, and got the train home. And that was...
You all managed to find babysitters at the same time.
That's, yeah, we have to book these things way ahead of time.
Months in advance. Yeah. No, that's good. I mean, it's important to maintain those sorts of things. And have you lived where you lived for quite some time? Do you feel sort of you're pretty settled in the area that you're in?
Well, I've only lived here for... So I'm in Newcastle under Lyme. And I've only been here for 8 years. I lived in Stoke-on-Trent before most of my life, and I was born in Southampton, so I've moved quite a bit. Am I settled? Yes. My friends are here, and my wife's family is here. My daughter goes to school here, so, you know, all good. With my job being remote, I can work from anywhere. I'm not tied here. Where we live now isn't our forever home. We don't know where we want to move to, and that's made harder by having a kid at school now as well.
Yeah.
But I would move anywhere with my family.
It's nice to have that kind of attitude. Your home is wherever your family are.
I have said this to my friends recently. Like, when we got back from Australia, they were asking me how it was. I was like, well, I'd move. And I'm very, like, nonchalant about the whole thing. But I do realize how hard it would be to make a move like that. And how much of an upheaval it would be to those relationships as well. Like, I would miss my family and friends. But that's not the only thing that stops me from wanting to move, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, a slight change of gear now. But one thing we were chatting about in the run-up to recording this was imposter syndrome, and how that plays out for different people in different ways. What's your relationship like with that?
Big time imposter syndrome. Big time. When I was managing a team, it felt very circumstantial, more than qualified to do so. I hope I did a good job, given the limitations and situations we were in at the time. And there are things that I know I did during that time that I hope people remember. I'm proud of myself for how I handled them. But yeah, even when I got my job at Laravel, even to this day, I'm still like, yeah, I'm not good enough for this job. And then going into public speaking, standing up in front of everyone and talking about a certain subject, no matter how well I think I know that subject, there's always going to be somebody that knows it better. And that's ridiculous, because there's so many people that don't know that subject. And yet I'm just constantly doubting myself. What if somebody asks me a question that I don't know the answer to, and I'm on stage and I look like an idiot? I think I'm very good, just like in life in general, in disconnecting myself from whatever situation I'm in for a period of time. So, like, I do really enjoy giving talks,
even though I feel like a huge imposter and I get massive anxiety, especially like when I'm like backstage ready to go on next. I hate that feeling. But I'll get to a point where I'm like, yeah, this is James that doesn't speak, and then this is James that does speak, and those two people are disconnected from one another.
Interesting. Kind of like a persona that you sort of wear for the run-up or duration of the thing that you're trying to do. I was going to say, I mean, imposter syndrome can have the effect of stopping you from taking on those sorts of challenges and having those kinds of experiences completely. I mean, that's certainly my experience of it. A big reason why I haven't done more, you know, in my 16 years of doing this job is partly because of those sorts of feelings, but they are enough to kind of clamp down enough that I don't do it at all. Whereas for you, I mean, you're putting yourself in that sort of position where you know you're going to be anxious. Interesting that it doesn't seem to stop you from actually going ahead and doing those things.
No, it very much used to. And now that I am working for a company such as Laravel, where people know my name more, I do get more worried about putting things out and releasing things that aren't very good. But I also think, like, you're supposed to do something that scares you every day. And also, I enjoy it. Like, I do enjoy it. But I also hate the run-up to it.
No, I'm pretty bad with the sort of build-up to something like that. It's always far worse than the actual execution of the thing.
I was recorded in Australia, and I watched myself back, and I was like, yeah, I don't recognize that person on stage. And I kind of said that to my friend who watched it with me, and he was like, well, that's who you are. Like, when you're comfortable, that is you. Yeah. And I was like, that's so weird, because I always think that I'm this different person, and like, I'm very in my own head while I'm giving that talk, and I'm trying to be funny so that if I can make somebody laugh in the audience, they're on my side. They don't want me to fail. That's enough for me.
Yeah. I mean, that is almost always the case. You're very rarely in front of an audience of people who are actively wanting you to sort of, you know, die on your ass and you know, never speak again. So, but it can be a very hard thing to internalize. And going back one step, which was, you said that you enjoy the process of actually doing it, but obviously once you have done something like that, you know, it can potentially open more doors and avenues for you down the track. So is that your kind of experience? The more you do, you still get the anxiety, but it's almost like a positive feedback loop in a way. You kind of, the more you do, the more you can kind of enjoy the rewards of doing those things as well.
Yes, absolutely. So, and then last year I started giving talks at like conferences. Yeah, the first one I did was Laracon India, which had over 1,000 people in the audience.
I know, that was quite something. Just watching the videos for those.
It was amazing. They treated us like rock stars, and we had the best time you could ever ask for. And I think starting off there, I thought, 1,000 people, like, I can do this. And then you get up on stage and you're like, holy hell, that's 1,000 people. And it's the first time I've given this particular talk. And I was like, there was a lot going on. There was a drone flying around. There was some of the sponsor stuff was still going up. It was just like chaotic, but the room was so big, it didn't really matter either. And then since giving that talk, I was able to go on to do Laravel Live in London, Brum PHP, and then Australia. And then I've got more talks this year. And also I run a meetup as well. So I kind of host that, get up and talk to people. So it has definitely opened more avenues a lot quicker than I thought it would do as well. And like I say, I enjoy it. So it's amazing that I get to have this opportunity to travel the world, but also I find it very stressful as well. But the reward is well worth the stress for me.
Yes. I mean, it certainly sounds it. Okay, a two-part question for you. Part one, if you're actively looking after your mental health, what does that look like? And two, how often are you actually able to stick to those things? How often are you actually building those habits?
Yeah, so I'm not really a person that builds habits, like knowing habits. I have got some like things on my to-do list. Each morning I'm supposed to complete the Wordle. Which I do, and I send that to my family, and we compete, which is nice. And I do that most days. Like my longest streak was like 122 days, and then it was actually when traveling to Australia the whole time zone thing messed me up and I couldn't work out when I was supposed supposed to do it. So that fell apart. In terms of looking after my mental health, I do tend to start running more when I'm not feeling so good. When I first started, I was so focused on pace and like running form and breathing that it was so overwhelming that I couldn't think about anything anyway. And then when I got to just it being like a natural thing, I didn't even really think about the things that I needed to do, not consciously anyway. I'd come back and feel better, which is probably the endorphins and stuff. But I tend to run when I'm not feeling so great. And I have recently started using an app called Ed Can Help, I think it is. And it uses like some noise that you listen to for 20 minutes. It's like white noise with almost a washing machine in the background. It's not pleasant at all. But I have found myself being able to work through some stuff that I have going on quicker. The guy, I presume he's called Ed, he in the first session talks about the kind of how this will feel, and if you're jumping around in thoughts, don't worry, just follow that pattern, let your brain go where it wants to go. And I did find myself at one point like jumping back to when I went to see my brother in hospital after he passed away, and just found myself like in floods of tears, and I presumed that something had been eating away, that I just needed that cry. And man, I felt so good after that, like really good. And that's in that first 20-minute session, that wasn't even the only thing that I kind of experienced. I took the headphones off and I was like, right, I need to do these things to make myself feel better. And I don't really remember thinking about them too much individually.
That's really interesting. I don't think I've come across that before.
Yeah. It's good. It is a subscription, which like £40 a year or something. And it seems like a lot, but honestly, it works.
That sounds a little bit almost like a sort of form of mindfulness, but with some odd white noise, kind of like doing something in your head at the same time. That's really interesting.
My wife tried it, and she was like, "Well, it just annoyed me for 20 minutes."
Yes, I guess it might be one of those things that works for some people better than others.
But. Yeah.
Okay, I think one more question. I'm going to end on the question that you wrapped things up with in the last series. What makes you a happy dev?
Family and friends. You can't really ask for much more than that, can you? My friends were there when my brother died. They picked me up. They looked after me. And they themselves have all had difficulties over the last few years. And we've all been there to support them. You know, my family, I've got three beautiful girls that I love a lot. Trying not to tear up as I say this. That was unexpected. And wherever they are, that's the only place that I want to be. So, yeah.
Well, you know what? I think that is a perfect point to wrap this up on. Thanks very much, James.
Lovely. Thank you very much, John.